did you see this weekend out of the Redbirds that you really liked?
Okay, let's talk about what I really liked. The offense looks incredible. I remember when we were commentating the game in Iowa, and we were very worried about Tommy Rittenhouse's pocket awareness. He looked like a whole new quarterback to that weekend. The pressure was getting to him, and he was still hitting multiple reads. He was evading getting out of the pocket, scrambling when he needed to. It's looking like just week after week after week, he's getting more comfortable in the role, and that's really what the Redbirds' offense needed.
Yeah, to me, it seemed like there's a lot of highs and lows in the whole entire game. Yes, they put up 51 points. Their offense looked amazing. Like, their freshman right now, Xavier Lloyd, looks like he's going to be an absolute, like, huge piece for this team going forward. But on the other side, you're letting a Western team put up 34 points on you. And I know, like, there's 2 seconds left in the game. They scored a touchdown, but, like, still, that's not a good defense at that point.
Yeah, so Ben wanted me to talk about the positives, but that's what really needs to be addressed. This is Western Illinois. Why are they dropping 21 points at halftime? Why is Nathan Lamb looking like the next generation or the regen of Josh Allen? Why does he have 3 rushing touchdowns? This team hasn't won since October 30th of 2021. Why are they hanging with an FCS nationally ranked team? That's embarrassing. And the Redbirds, if they really want to be a playoff team, you can't let Western Illinois be hanging in with you guys.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing because we talked about the defense. The defense is so key, and there's been a lot of injuries to their fault. So, but Western Illinois had 503 offensive yards to Illinois State's 390, and still lost by 17 points or 18 points. I mean, that's unheard of, really, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think I've seen a stat line since the NFL championship a couple of years ago when it was Nick Foles versus Tom Brady and they put up like over 1,000 yards and still lost. But nonetheless, completely irrelevant to this. But yeah, I mean, there were a lot of mistakes by the Redbirds too. They were just not playing. They made so many dumb mistakes that kept Leatherneck's drives alive. And it was really just on penalties, costly penalties of just dumb things that could be fixed, things that we could take out. It was a lot of like talking that got them penalties, a lot of holding calls. It just we got to get these things fixed because, as Joey said, if they can do that, they are really a good team looking forward in the FCS.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at this defense; it's a complete opposite story from where they were last year. Last year, they lost pretty much everybody, so they had a whole new fresh defense, and that's why they were allowing points. They brought back practically everybody, and they're still allowing Western Illinois to drop 34 points on them. I understand Amir Abdullah is such a massive loss for them, but you really just can't be letting the Leathernecks score at will because they scored on 3 straight drives in the first half. The Western Illinois Leathernecks, let me repeat that in case you guys don't understand that. The Western Illinois Leathernecks scored on 3 drives, and we're at 1 point leading Illinois State. That just cannot happen.
And also, their quarterback got injured, and it was their backup quarterback doing all of that.
Oh, wow.
Nathan Lamb was a backup? I'm telling you guys, I actually thought he was Josh Allen.
He came out for a little bit, I think, and then I think this other kid came in for a while. Because I saw the numbers change during the game. I might be wrong, though. I think I saw 2 quarterbacks, though. I could have sworn.
Might be right. Me and Julian were watching it from HQ at Redbird Productions, so we kind of were on the broadcast side of it. Joey himself was calling the game for here at WZND.
Yeah, I think Irvin came in the 4th.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's kind of see how we got here for the Redbirds. So right off the bat, they just scored in bunches. And I thought this game was going to be a complete blowout the way that it went. Tommy Rittenhouse, 4 plays into the first quarter, finds Xavier Lloyd, who I think Joey or one of you
Julian.
Guys, Julian mentioned it earlier, the freshman with a 59-yard touchdown pass. That got things going for the Redbirds. And then right immediately the drive after that, Tommy Rittenhouse with a 6-yard run. We're used to that just about every week. And then just 2 drives that just took so much time off the clock. 75 yards, 95 yards. Western Illinois just comes right back, ties it up. And then we saw a drive with Jake Rubley, and it looked good. He scores with a touchdown of his own. So 21-14. Offense looked good at this point, I think. But once again, it was just that defense that was really kicking them in the butt.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It's just the rushing attack of Illinois State's offense is just so lethal. They can just, anybody can run the ball. The quarterback, all their running backs, they're just incredible. And with Rittenhouse developing as a passer, it's just huge for them. But you just look at this defense. Western Illinois did not have a rushing touchdown heading in this game. They're at 0, and they brought in 3 with their quarterback. It was just very concerning.
I will say, though, offensively, their play calling did look a lot better, though. Mm-hmm. They got their ball to their athletes. Instead of just running the ball straight at the middle a million times, they got the ball to Xavier Lloyd about 4 times. Sobkiewicz actually had a touchdown for the first time. So I think Spat kind of noticed that he just can't run the ball the whole entire game. You got to get your ball to your athletes.
From there on out, it was basically back and forth. I would say really the big kicker was when they had the field goal block, which was just awesome to see. And special teams has looked really good. I know that their punter just won player of the week in terms of FCS. But I would let's go over to the run game really quick because, you know, they've obviously had some injuries there, but Wanker's right has looked really, really good. Just stepping up back into that starting role, 106 yards on 16 attempts and a touchdown. I mean, he's looked really impressive now that he's officially taken over that starting running back position.
I mean, that's huge for Tommy's development as well. If you have a guy in the backfield that could run just like you, you could just hand the ball off to him and you could just let him work. I mean, that's probably one of the best things as a young quarterback, just learning more too, because if you have another good guy in the backfield, it's just only going to help your team going up.
Yeah, we need to bounce off that point as well. Tommy Rittenhouse heading into the season, we just assume that this is a guy that's only going to run the ball. Only ran the ball three times for 17 yards. And then in this game, 16 for 22, 201 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Like, this is not the Tommy Rittenhouse we knew at all. And, man, if he can develop the passing side of his game, the Redbirds offense can just do so many different things, and they'll be very unpredictable for defensive coordinators to try and schedule around.
All right, well, as much as we talk negatively about some of the bad things, a win is still a win, 51-34, and now we move forward. Moving forward to this week, where the Redbirds take on the 1-2 Eastern Illinois at 6 p.m. It still feels weird whenever there's a night game at Hancock Stadium because it feels like they're all during the day. Nonetheless, it's a blackout game at Hancock Stadium, 6 p.m., 5:50 is the start time of our broadcast. So, fellas, 1-2 Eastern Illinois. I mean, you have to be expecting a win here, right?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But then again, we expected a blowout against Western Illinois and it ended up being close until the first half. So Illinois State, you may be expecting the game, but you can't make the same mistake as last week where you're too overconfident and you let Western Illinois hang in the game. You got to make a statement here, especially if you want to climb up those FCS rankings and get into the top 8. Because I found this out from Steve the other day. Even if we get top 16, we're not going to host a playoff game unless we get top 8 because IHSA is going to have their state championship in the arena. So if we want to get those home playoff games, we got to be a top 8 team. And if you want to be a top 8 team, you got to make statements. You can't just get victories.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a win. This is kind of more of a statement game you have to have going to ND State next week because going into a game where it's a top-ranked opponent, you got to have some confidence going into that one. You can't go from a loss to a big game like that. So I think they're going to throw it out on the field in the next one.
Yeah, but to counteract that, you can't just look at Eastern Illinois as an easy win and then just be focusing on North Dakota State. You got to be focusing on the game that's happening this Saturday, not the game that's happening two Saturdays away, because we already saw mentality hurt Illinois State almost with, as I said, Western Illinois hanging in the game. If Illinois State truly wants to make a statement, the focus has to 100% be on Eastern Illinois this weekend.
Eastern Illinois hasn't had their fair share of fun to start this year. I will say that they have gotten a 27-20 win over Indiana State, but week one got the brakes blown off them by University of Illinois 45-0.
Mm-hmm. Start clapping,
and then
Julia.
Last week they went to Northwestern in Evanston and lost 31-7. So, you know, it's kind of similar to what we saw with Western where they had Northern Illinois and
NIU.
NIU and who was the other one?
Indiana.
Who Indiana? What a story they've been to start this year. But that's completely against what we're talking about. But you can kind of maybe take that into play a little bit where you've had two Big Ten opponents and you've beaten your only FCS opponent. So I don't know. I still do think. I mean, coming here, coming off last week, seeing the offense, it just makes too much sense for Illinois State to win this game this week.
Yeah, but Illinois State does need to be careful because Eastern Illinois, their offensive coordinator was Western Illinois' head coach this season. And while he was there at Eastern Illinois, they made FCS history by having the highest win percentage increase in just history from one team to the other as they finished in the top 4 last year. They've lost a lot of talent, so it's not the same group. But this is a team that finally knows how to win games, so Illinois State still needs to be humble but confident heading into this game.
I mean, this is the type of game I feel like that you just feed off of your confidence from last week, though, too, because I think Brock's back knew that last game wasn't perfection. They had a lot of mistakes, even though they put up 51 points. I feel like this whole week just prepping and more noticing that they can't take their opponents lightly. So that's what kind of why I feel more confident this week for them, because coming off of a bad game like that was a good game at the same time. You're going to want to fix all your mistakes you made that last game. And I think this is going to be the week where they make all those mistakes better.
My question for you, Julian, is though, you can be 100% confident in this offense. I mean, you're scoring 51 points. You're getting those points. But how confident are you in the defense after allowing 34 to a team you're supposed to be much more better than?
I think that's the team that's gonna. I think that's the part of the defense that's gonna put on the more work, honestly, because they're the ones that had the more of a struggle during the whole game. The offense played great. The defense on the other side, I bet this whole entire week they were just like, all right, we didn't have the best game, we got to show out next week. Mm-hmm. You got to help out your offense. You got to put some stands on the field. That's what you got to do.
Eastern Illinois, Illinois State live at 5:50 here on 103.3 WZND on Saturday. When we come back, we're going to hear from Redbird volleyball coach Allie Matters here on the Red Zone. 103.3 WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Joey LeMaster, and Julian Voss. We're going to talk some more Redbird sports for you, and we're going to head over to volleyball. Shaden Cohen was on the show last week, and he brought us a great interview from the head coach of the Bloomington Bison, and now he brought us an even better interview with head coach of the Redbirds, Allie Matters. In this interview, she really goes over some of the freshmen, or excuse me, some of the transfers and freshmen and all the new players that they've brought in to really help improve this Redbird team. So right now, we're going to kick it, and you're going to hear some more from Allie Matters.
So, Allie, you have 11 new faces to this program.
Yep.
What can you describe on that?
11 new people is a lot of new people, especially when our roster, 18, 19 people, that's well over half. I mean, this roster, it's just there's so much depth, there's so much versatility. Everyone can do a little bit of everything. So while it's been at times overwhelming to get everybody acclimated, especially the freshmen to being at college, the transfers, you know, being at a new place in a new gym with new training, it's just a lot. But culturally, we're in a really good spot, and everyone's, you know, the returners have welcomed them, and it's a lot of fun to have so many new faces and just essentially a whole new roster.
Yeah. And I spoke to Ruth and Michaela earlier. Yep. How have you noticed how they've acclimatized
to
the roster?
Yeah, I think that recruiting Michaela was very easy. Like, she just was exactly what we needed from that position, and we just kind of, I feel like when I talk to her, I feel like I've known her for a really long time. Like, we just are very similar in the way we see the game, and she's very passionate and competitive. So she filled a spot that we really, really needed, and she's doing it with ease, and everyone loves her and respects her, and she's just a joy to coach. And Ruth, she was one of the first people to commit in that recruiting class, and she committed right on the spot, and it was just such a cool experience. And she's always smiling, and she just brings so much joy to the game and to our team, and they're just both really great. And the best part about our seniors and our grads, like, they're so welcoming and accepting of all the freshmen. So while there is seniority, there's so much mutual respect amongst the roster that it just makes everything that much easier, you know?
Speaking on that, who would you say are the leaders that are introducing the freshmen and the transfers to the culture?
Yeah, I mean, I think Hannah Reichensberger and Ada Shadowald are two returners that have the most playing experience. They've both been starting since they were freshmen, but all of our returners, I mean, Megan Haynes, everybody had a really good spring and just were really ready to welcome all these new faces. But I would say Ada and Hannah mostly, for sure.
And then what are some of your goals going into the season?
Yeah, I think that unfortunately for sports teams, if you win, that means you're a good team, and if you lose, that means you're a bad team. So I think for us early, we know that we're going to be defined by wins and losses, but we just want to keep taking steps forward. So even at Illinois, we lost to them, but we played so well as a team, so we took steps forward. You know, this past weekend, we did lose a match, but we won two matches. You know, we went 2-1. So as long as we keep taking steps forward, that's all I can ask for. And we want to compete for a championship. So whatever that looks like come November, you'll have to touch base with me again in a couple of weeks here. But we really feel good about our roster and our ability to compete with the top of the NBC.
And recruiting with Ruth and Michaela, what did you see in them? And you were like, I got to have them.
I think that, you know, all the volleyball skills, you know, I can teach them, hey, I want you to set this ball, or hey, I'm going to teach you how to hit this shot. But character is something that it's just innate. It's what they bring to the table. So while I can work on leadership and mentorship and communicating and all of those you know, intangibles. Like, Ruth was just such a joy to watch throughout the recruiting process. When Michaela's name hit the transfer portal and we were able to watch her play, it was just like, it's a no-brainer. Like, we have to have this kid. So, and we were lucky that both Ruth and Michaela came on visits, you know, separately, of course, but they loved Illinois State and, you know, what we offer academically and our support staff. And, you know, it was just like a very good mutual, like, they wanted us just as much as we wanted them type of thing. And that's what makes recruiting fun. So
how would you describe the chemistry in the locker room?
Yeah. I try to stay out of the locker room because the kids are always doing like dance parties and just doing funny stuff, but they have their pregame rituals and they're always like dancing and listening to music and being wild. And they're just a fun group. Like, that's just what makes a team a team. They come from different places, different states, different high schools, different family backgrounds, and we all bring it together and make it work. So it's just, you know, I think even like the older girls, like Michaela, she's a senior, but this is her first year here. So she doesn't have as much experience at ISU as Ada is, but Ada's a junior. So Michaela has more playing experience, just not here. So everybody, you know, there's people, it's just so crazy how rosters are built and just all the value that everyone brings individually that just makes up this big powerhouse of a group. It's really been cool to see everyone work hard and build just kind of like, hey, what's the identity of our program over 3 weeks of preseason? You know, it's cool. It's fun.
And then what can the residents of Bloomington Normal expect from the Redbirds this season?
I mean, we have, our roster is big. Like, it's big, it's physical, and we just have a lot of talent. You know, I think that, you know, volleyball is just growing and growing and growing. I mean, even last night, you know, Creighton playing Nebraska, like, it's just, I dare someone to come to a game, buy a ticket, and if they don't like it, I will give them a full refund. It's just impossible. It's like, the game is fast and it's physical and it's fun, and, you know, it's just a really good time to be a part of volleyball and our sport. You know, it's just getting bigger, faster, stronger. So I just think when people come to watch us play, they're just going to watch really, really good volleyball, and that's what we're really proud of this year as a staff.
And then this is your third year.
Yeah.
Out of all your time here, what's been the biggest lesson you've learned?
Yeah, I think that this is my first year where we recruited the entire roster. So my first year, you know, I inherited a group. My second year was able to bring in some recruits but still had some returners, you know, from the old roster. And I think it was harder than I thought it would be to bring the two groups together. And that so far has been my biggest challenge. And I've learned, you know, before I came here, I hadn't lost a whole lot. And in my first 2 years, I lost a whole lot. And while I was in it, it was tough to be in it. But now that I've been able to reflect on it, it has made me a better head coach.
Yeah.
And just moving forward and being with this roster that is completely mine, I should say. You know, I've had the honor to coach a lot of really, really good volleyball players, ones I inherited, ones I didn't recruit. But it is nice to get to a point where it's like, all right, this is finally year three. You know, this is, you know, our roster as a staff. So it's really rewarding to get your roster to a place where you really feel comfortable and you have a lot of control.
Thank you, Coach Matters, for sitting down with Jaden Cohen on that one. That one was actually to help him out with a story for the Vedette as well. But before we get into really the conversation as well as the Redbird volleyball, Coach Matters is just the best. She always seems so like cheerful. She's so welcome to doing any kind of media. She's just been awesome to all of us.
It's just the whole volleyball team as well. Like, yeah, we love all Illinois State sports teams here, but I don't think I've ever had a bad interaction with the volleyball team. It's just their energy is just out of this world. It's always like they're on just a Red Bull at 24/7. Like, they're just so electric, and the vibes are always there, and you can tell in interviews like that.
Yeah, they're very respectful. Anytime I've been in a press conference or an interview with anybody, they're always just like very happy, very like lighthearted, very just nice, and just good vibes with everything. So the volleyball team honestly is making a good name for themselves just outside of sports, I would say.
Coach Matters talked a lot in that interview about her current recruiting class, whether it was freshmen, transfers. She mentioned how this is her third season, and this is the first time that everyone on the roster is someone that she's recruited or has had a part in recruiting. If you look at the team right now, she talked very highly of the team, and everyone around the program seems super excited. Everyone I've talked to in athletics is like, I've heard really good things about this team. It feels like they're going to be turning a corner. They were obviously picked fourth in the MVC poll. Right now, it's not going their way as they've lost four in a row and currently sit at 3-7. on the season right before they go to the Owls Paradise Classic, which is at FAU. But I think it all goes back to what we talked about last week and kind of what we've been talking about all last year. What did they start again last year? 0-11?
0-9. Yeah.
And then at one point they had a 9-game winning streak. Mm-hmm. It's early and they're not in conference play yet. I think that it still feels like they're meshing the groups together and really trying to find an identity with this new group.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's just going to bound to happen. I mean, 11 out of the 19 players are either new freshmen or transfers. Like, that's a lot of chemistry that's going to just take game after game to build. And they're already off to a better start than they were last year. Yeah. So they're clearly taking a step in the right direction. They have a lot of respect, as you said, Ben, being ranked or predicted to finish fourth in the MVC. So, like, the quality's there. They just got to get into Valley play ASAP because you don't want to take too many losses and let that confidence get deflated.
Yeah, they're just building up the chemistry at this point. There's a lot of new faces on the team, a lot of new players that haven't played together at some point. So you just got to mesh them all together at any point because volleyball is a huge communication sport, and it's going to take them a minute to get there.
Yeah, it's not even just like trying to get the new faces to work out. They also lost crucial names as well. Like Nora Yonko is a great server for them. Cassie Jordan was great next to Ada Shadowald as well. So like they lost some big names, but they brought in new recruits. They brought in new transfers. It's just, as we're going to keep repeating, it just takes time for that to click. And it looks like it's starting to, that will be coming around for the Redbirds.
The biggest thing too, as I've seen really this happen with multiple Redbird teams across my time here, is it really doesn't, these games early in the season, and it really more so goes for volleyball, both basketball teams and baseball. As much as all these games go on the record and they're carbon minted into the stats, these games really are more tune-up games for Valley play. We're not a power four now, I guess you could say. Power four conference where every game matters. You have to win all these games, right? Because if you don't, it's kind of embarrassing. You're playing most of the time the power four, trying to tune yourself up for the competition that you're going to end up playing in conference play, because if you really want to make a run for it, whether you be a Cinderella come tournament time or whatever it might be, these are tuning you up for the ultimate goal of winning the conference, winning the tournament, and then going to the big tournament itself. Cool. Once again, Redbird Volleyball is going this weekend to the Owls Paradise Classic. And then after that, September 27th, just a week from today, they will be home two nights in a row. They'll be home September 27th for their first official home game in the Valley, and then homecoming day, September 28th, it'll be a doubleheader with them in football where they'll take on Belmont at 7:30. When we come back on the Red Zone, we're going to look back at week two of the NFL season. Stay right here on the Red Zone. WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Boss, Joey LeMaster going back over week two of the National Football League season. And it was a very, very good week for football. We talked about it in the opener. A lot of good games that we were excited about. And we're going to start right here. A week ago today, it was Thursday night football, where it was the Bills and Dolphins. And somehow, we are getting to pick six later, but somehow I escaped with a highway robbery of being the only one that picked the Buffalo Bills. So I just want to hold that over your guys' head. But there were a lot of things that happened in this game. It ended up being a Bills blowout, but I think the real story that's coming from this game is Tua Tagovailoa and his concussions, which is just a story that feels like it's rinse and repeat at this time, at this point. It's carbon copy every year. We don't really have to talk much about the game because the Bills won 31-10, but maybe just your thoughts on just this whole Tua situation.
I mean, it's pretty upsetting seeing somebody like with that much talent just go down so many times with so many head injuries. And it's just it happened so many times now that it's just scary to see him go back on the field. It's just, somebody that's also played football, seen a lot of people with concussions in the past as well. Like, it's a very scary thing to get concussions more and more because it's very harmful for your future.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so tough because you know how much he loves the game of football. It's someone that's just going to want to play week in and week out, but like, we've seen some people go on wild tangents on Twitter. We've seen some people do crazy crimes that's outside of football. It's just concussions. They do damage to the brain. It's just, that's not something you want to see to happen to someone such a good guy as Tua is.
Right now, Tua is going to be on the IR as he continues to meet with his concussion specialist. His future in the National Football League really feels like it's still a question mark at this point. They'll be riding out with Skylar Thompson for the next couple weeks as the starting quarterback, I mean, you feel bad for them because it feels like the season's already kind of derailed, because who knows whether or not Tua will be back this season. But once again, just wishing the best for him. He's obviously gone through a lot over these last couple years in the NFL. Moving on to the Sunday slate, though, in the first game of the day, just I would say probably there were a lot of upsets this week. No doubt about it. I mean, it was just all over the board. But I think this one to me was the most shocking, considering what they did to the Cleveland Browns in week one. But the New Orleans Saints, what? 44-19, just absolutely annihilating the Dallas Cowboys. Alvin Kamara with four total touchdowns. Boys, are the Saints for real?
Who dat?
We got MVP Derek Carr, and it's just that story is so funny to me, because if you asked a Saint fan 6 months ago how they felt about Derek Carr, they would say a lot of offensive language that we can't say on air. They did not like that man at all. And now 2 weeks in the season, he looks like an MVP candidate and might just get a statue outside of the stadium at this rate. Derek Carr has just been incredible these first 2 weeks.
I mean, Alvin Kamara looks like he's in his rookie year right now.
Right?
Every single year, he's been so efficient and so underrated. So I think this team could have a very good future coming out.
I mentioned this to a couple of my friends, and it's really crazy to think Alvin Kamara, he is on a Hall of Fame trajectory. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has been the most, like, you know, he might have some off-field troubles like here and there in the past, but in terms of like reliability and durability, he has been so healthy over the last couple of years.
And that's one of the things with running backs is their regressions just hit harder than anybody else does. So the fact that Kamara's still performing at this sort of level is just unreal.
He has not hit a wall yet, and it's just been impressive to see. Tampa Bay Buccaneers going into Detroit. We were just talking about Detroit being a team of destiny this year. No, maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with MVP Baker Mayfield? What year is this? It's a year we've never seen before, but the Buccaneers 2-0 upsetting the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I know we're 2 weeks into the season, but this might be the funniest MVP race we've currently seen.
I know, right?
It's like Baker, Sam Darnold, and Derek Carr. This is going to be the most unserious thing in the world. What happened to the league I loved?
I mean, this team does look very good right now.
Oh, yeah.
Though. Like, Baker Mayfield looks like he's just owning this team. Like, he's the quarterback of this franchise right now. And Chris Godwin and Mike Evans are both playing great, too. So this team has a lot of talent going on right now.
Could you imagine being a Cleveland Browns fan watching this?
Oh, my God.
I'd be sick to my
or
stomach.
Or a Carolina Panthers fan.
Oh, man, yeah. What do you mean? Andy Darnold coming – or not Andy Darnold. Andy Dalton coming back in.
You got Sam Darnold on the mind, man.
No, I want to talk about them Vikings.
All right, Green Bay Packers. I would consider this an upset, too, even though it was at Lambeau Field. Green Bay Packers, 16, Indianapolis Colts, 10. Packers get it done without their quarterback, Jordan Love. I think my biggest takeaway from this game is Anthony Richardson might be the best, worst NFL quarterback in the league right now. Some weeks I think he is going to light up the world and just be the greatest thing ever. Other weeks I see this Anthony Richardson, and I am like, how are you on a football field right now?
Jameis Winston is back, ladies and gentlemen. We got another one in the NFL because we're going to see 40 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, and just a whole lot of vibes with the Colts. But what a massive win this is for the Packers. You know, your starting quarterback's going to be out for a little bit, and Malik Willis is not exactly the best at the game of football. So the fact that they're getting wins against teams the caliber of the Colts, that's so huge for them.
I mean, they let Josh Jacobs carry the ball 32 times.
Crazy.
And that's just insane. Obviously, they have not that much trust in Malik Willis throwing the ball if they're going to give their starting running back. They just paid so much money, 32 carries. But, I mean, if it's working, it's working.
New York Jets, 24, Titans, 17. Don't need to spend much time on this game because...
Can we talk about Will Levis, though?
Yeah.
Will Levis gone viral 2 weeks in a row for some of the craziest photos ever produced.
He's struggling right now, but they invested in him. They believe in him. We'll see how that works out for them. But Aaron Rodgers and the Jets get their first win. I think we can move on from that. Braylon Allen did look good, though, and he is the backup to Breece Hall. So I think that's going to be a fun little two-back duo. 23-17, Minnesota Vikings upset the San Francisco 49ers, the team that was in the big game just about 8 months ago. And really, I mean, as Joey said, it's the Sam Darnold show right now in Minnesota. You thought Minnesota was going away? No, it doesn't matter. They're probably in a better position with Darnold than they would have been with their rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy.
I mean, Jettis just looks like he's still the number one receiver in the league right now. Had a 97-yard touchdown. I know he got injured during the game. I think he'll be fine, honestly, but... This Vikings team is looking very good. Their defense looks really good right now, holding the 49ers to 17 points. So, I mean, like, if this Vikings team is good, this NFC North is going to look pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And just even as a Bears fan, how can you not just be happy for Sam Darnold? He's been memed year after year, just considered a bust, keep seeing ghosts, and just a bunch of other silly stories with him. To see him finally hooping should put a smile on the face of any football fan.
23-20, Seattle Seahawks beats a team that we're going to see later in the New England Patriots. Let's move on. The Washington Commanders, 21-18 over the dumpster fire that is the New York Giants. The Giants scored 3 touchdowns to the Commanders' 0. It was all field goals for the Commanders, but I will say Jaden Daniels looked good, and I'll even say one better. As much of a dumpster fire as the Giants are, Malik Nabers showed up this week, and it was good to see.
Yeah, it's just crazy to me. This is the second week in a row this happened to the Giants, where they've scored 3 touchdowns and have allowed 0 and lost the game. How does that happen?
That's insane. They're a dumpster fire.
They're so bad. I mean, I hate just watching the Giants play football.
It's horrible.
Why do you do that to yourself?
I don't know.
Let's talk about a team that's even worse to watch play football. Man. Chargers, Plymouthing. I don't even think that's a real word, but either way, the Carolina Panthers 26-3. Bryce Young, the number one pick from a year ago, has been benched for Andy Dalton, and this was really the biggest story in football this week.
Yeah, Carolina screwed over Bryce Young. I'm just gonna say it how it is. They brought in a whole new coaching staff, and they gave him, like, 1 rep in preseason. Yeah, no wonder he doesn't know what's going on. No wonder he's making reckless throws. Like, this is a whole new system he's trying to understand, and Carolina has just not given him the opportunity to learn it, and he's being really discredited.
Yeah, I mean, he's somebody with a lot of talent. He was a Heisman Trophy winner that year before he was drafted. So, I mean, like, obviously he has some talent with him. I know he's pretty small in the backfield to throw over 6'5" dudes, but he has a lot of talent with him, and I think the Panthers just did not bring that out.
Yeah, it's just a tough situation to see. Hopefully that doesn't happen to another number one pick, but we're going to get to that in a little bit.
Don't you dare manifest that.
I'm not manifesting anything. Cleveland Browns, 18 over the Jacksonville Jaguars, 13. I think the biggest story here is just a tough start for Jacksonville, and it doesn't feel like they should be better than this, right?
I've always said Trevor Lawrence is kind of overrated.
Yeah, it's such a weird scenario there because T-Law just got that big deal and he's going to be there for a long time. So who really knows what's going on there? Just a weird game of two franchises that don't really seem to have much of a direction right now. Las Vegas Raiders, 26 over the Ravens, 23. The Ravens starting 0-2 for the first time since 2015. And, yeah, I mean, I think the big story is you're just not the start you were expecting at all for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders' defense looked really good that game, though. But on the other side, I think Lamar does need another receiver, though. They don't have enough weapons for him to throw the ball to. I mean, Zay Flowers is good, but I don't think he's a wide receiver one.
Yeah, I kind of laugh at this Ravens receiving core because this is like the fourth year in a row. It's like, dude, watch out for this Rashad Bateman breakout year, dude. It's going to be the year this year, and it just does not happen. So the Ravens are just kind of banking on talent that's not there right now. And when you have a team that's ready to win a big game like this, you got to bring in the stars to help them win that game.
And a blowout in Arizona. The Cardinals, 41 to the Rams, 10. Kyler Murray showed up. Maserati Marv is finally here. 4 receptions, 130 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I don't really think there's much to say about this game other than I think the Cardinals might actually be pretty good this year.
Yep.
Man, my fantasy team's looking very good right now because of Marvin Harrison. I got him on 4 of my teams. I was just waiting for that breakout to happen.
Yeah, this pick six game is going to scar me for eternity because I literally changed it to the Rams last second because everyone else was picking Cardinals and I wanted to be quirky and different. I'm just trusting my gut from now on.
Pittsburgh Steelers, 13. Denver Broncos, 6. We can move on, but Justin Fields is 2-0. The Chiefs beat the Bengals 26-25. A lot of controversy online about this one, but nonetheless, Burrowhead kind of got a little silent after this one because the Chiefs managed to silence the Bengals.
I think Mahomes got very lucky with the stripes. The refs helped him a lot at the end of the game. I think the Bengals should have won that one. There was a lot of very iffy calls at the end, but the Bengals, I think they're going to bounce back.
Yeah, I think the year on the stats 2018, I'm sorry if I'm spreading some misinformation, but Mahomes has had 17 interceptions overturned due to referee penalties. That's crazy.
All right, we're going to get to Sunday Night Football. We're going to close out this segment with the Bears and Texans, but let's just do Monday Night really quick. The Falcons, 22 to the Eagles, 21. I called this a week ago, and I feel so good about it. Kirk Cousins is back, and the Falcons pull off one of, I'd say, the craziest upsets of the weekend, just considering how it unfolded.
You like that? You like that? What a performance that was for the Falcons. And the defense looked pretty solid, because I thought the Eagles potentially had the best offense in the NFL, and they only dropped 21.
I have a take about this game, and I think you guys are going to agree with me on this one. Why are they throwing it? I think they should have ran the ball, and that takes off 40 seconds on the clock. So then you decide you give the Falcons back the ball with a minute left because they're making the field goal limit, or Saquon either runs it up the gut and gets the first down, or he gets 2 yards, and guess what you get to do? You get to be the Philadelphia Eagles and just do the tush push and ice the game away.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they should have done. I don't know what they were thinking by passing the ball, but it's okay. All right, we got 3 minutes to talk about it. We can rant all we want. Texans 19, Bears 13. I know you guys got takes, and give them to me.
I mean, like, I've said it since the beginning. This O-line is horrendous. Yeah. Caleb Williams in the backfield is going to get himself hurt if they don't make any type of change at all on this O-line, because you got guys like Nate Davis not making any blocks, just looking around. You got guys like Coleman Sheldon getting blown up in the inside. Darnell Wright's worse right now because Nate Davis is horrible. So, I mean, like, this whole O-line, nothing is going to produce if the O-line isn't good. And Eberflus has to make a change right now with it.
Yeah, absolutely, because like, you look at the stats, 7 sacks, 36 pressures on 37 dropbacks. That's a rookie quarterback in the second game, and he has 2.5 seconds to make a play.
I've got a positive take about this game.
Love that. Good mentality to have,
Ben. Let's be positive. The Bears had the ball to win the game with a drive left to go. That's a good thing. Does the offense need to step up? 100%. And is it necessarily the offense? Partially. That offensive line is brutal. You put it there perfectly. Shane Waldron needs to switch a couple things up. We need to get the run going. I know we don't have a running quarterback anymore, and that was such a big reason of why the Bears had the best run game in the NFL a year ago, but you arguably got better in the running back room. You have to run the football more and then open up the pass game.
Yeah, and here's multiple points with that. First off, the running game. Why is Herbert Roshan Johnson not touching the ball? Why is Travis Homer in the game? Can we be serious? Why is that a thing? And secondly, I'm so worried not to keep going back to the offensive line, but I don't think they can run it because like I see them try to do like halfback toss to Swift to go on the outside. And the tackles and guards just get blown up and now it's like a 4 yard loss. I'm not sure if Shane Waldron knows how to attack this running game because they just don't have any time because they just get blown up in the backfield.
I was wondering the same thing. Like they didn't put Roshan or Khalil Herbert in the game like at all. It was like a 3rd and 1. They have DeAndre Swift's like 5'10". They have him run the ball. Like what are we talking about here? It's like we still have Luke Getsy as our offensive coordinator, and just nothing has changed.
Roshan Johnson's too busy catching strays on the sidelines instead of getting the game and actually running the football. Nonetheless, I think the team is still headed in a positive direction. In all reality, did we expect to win this game? No, but it was close enough.
Yeah, because what I laugh about, because the Houston Texans, they're a big game contender. There's no doubt about it. They can go really far. And if you were to do predictions for the Bears record heading this game, you would have thought the Bears would have been 1-1 at this point. But now they lost this game and Twitter and everybody else is blowing it because why aren't the Bears undefeated right now? So just, we're all very reactionary, but the Bears will be okay.
Yeah, I mean, you look at their next few games and they're all good positive opponents. So I think right now they're going to make a bounce back.
We come back on the Red Zone. We are going to do some pick six. We'll pick six of the best games in this coming NFL slate back on the Red Zone. 103.3 WZND back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey Master, joined by our news director and our Pip 6 guest picker of the week, Colleen Holden. Welcome to the Red Zone, Colleen. Hey, and honestly, Sarah, you can make any kind of pick you want. It doesn't get much worse than what the guests have been picking this year, so if you don't have the best week, it's okay because most of our guest pickers haven't been picking well. So that's a good sign for you.
Yeah, low bar is definitely what I need.
So as we look forward to the week 2 standings, or going into week 3, should I say, right now it is me and Steve in the lead, 8-4 on the season. I myself had a nice week going 4-2. Just got to flex it a little bit. Julian and Joey both at 6-6, 500 on the season. And the guest, 5-7. So
can we talk about the fall off I had, man? I was 5-1 last week and then I went 1-5.
You're overthinking everything.
I know.
You picked the Bears.
That's gonna happen. You don't gotta worry about that.
The Rams. Didn't we all pick the Rams last week?
Yeah.
No, Steve picked the Cardinals.
Yeah, figures.
Smart. All right, let's move on to this week's games. We're gonna start on Thursday night, which is starting in about 30 minutes from now, Patriots and Jets. And I think there's not a lot to talk about with this game because I think we're all going in the same direction, maybe. Joey, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'm going with the Jets. I know the Patriots are off to a hot start to the season. I'm just not buying any stock into that. Give me the Jets.
Yeah, no, I'm taking the Patriots. Not gonna lie.
Really?
Ooh.
Last week I took all just like non-upsets. I gotta go one this week because I had a pretty bad week last week. Jacoby Brissett, I think could have a good little primetime game. And there's been a lot of primetime upsets, so why not?
Colleen?
I think I'm going to go with the Patriots. I'm afraid of heights, so like that's kind of not my thing.
I love the vibes.
I do like that a lot. I'm going to personally go with the Jets. I think they might have found a little bit of a formula last week. Give the ball to Breece Hall, and you're just going to win a lot of football games. But Braylon Allen, we talked about it on our last segment. I think he has been very solid to start the year as well as their second string running back. All right. Let's move on to the game. We all want to talk about the Bears and the Colts. We all know what happened to the Bears last week. We all know what happened to the Colts last week as well. It was not good for either teams. They had no signs of life on offense. So who's going to be the big winner here on offense this week, Joey?
This is our Colts. This is our team, and we bleed blue. But they're going to be bleeding with the loss. After the Bears get another victory, the Bears will be back in the win column.
I mean, like, yeah, I got the Bears too. I think this is the Caleb Williams game. It's got to happen at some point. I think this is going to be the one where they let him air it out a little bit and see what he can really do.
I think I'm going to go with the Colts on this one.
Oh, come on.
Well.
I am, like, I'm from the south suburbs of Chicago. Like, I am born and bred south side, but I just can't put my faith in the Bears. I think I don't know much about sports, but I know better than to put my faith in them because they have let so many people down time and time again.
Honestly, she's valid about that, though. We have put our faith in them way too many times. Oh, man. Do I just do what I did last year and just pick against them? Please no, do. I can't do it. I'm picking the Bears. I like what Julian said. I think we have to be having the big Caleb Williams week sometimes here. I think the big news for the Colts is that DeForest Buckner's out, mm-hmm. so that's their big pass rusher that obviously pass rushing was kind of what lost the game for the Bears last week. So hopefully we turn a corner this week. The Bears really do need a bounce back or else I think Chicago radio and Chicago in general might be on absolute fire come Monday morning. So they need this win more than ever. Steve is going with the Colts because why wouldn't he?
Yeah, professional hater.
All right. I think this is a big one. Lions and Cardinals. The Lions coming off a loss last week to many people's surprise, and the Cardinals just absolutely blowing the brakes off the Rams last week. I think we're like a Cardinals love podcast here now. Like, that's just kind of what we've become, and we're going up against our biggest enemy in Steve Cease and the Lions. So I'm interested to see where we all go here with this one.
Yeah, I'm riding with the Cardinals. I still think the Lions are a good team. I'm not trying to discredit them there, but that offense of the Cardinals is just so nasty. They just have so many weapons, and I'm going to ride with the hype. This is stock I'm fully investing in. Give me the Cardinals.
I mean, I'm going to the Lions this week because the Cardinals' offense is very good, but the Lions' defense is even better. So I think it's going to be more of like a toss-up game. This is going to be kind of the game where Marvin Harrison has to have a big game against some big opponents and really good DBs. So give me the Lions in this week.
I actually, fun fact, I'm a Lions fan. I don't know much about sports, but my friend Gavin, who was our NSOD in a previous year.
Rest in peace.
He's a giant Lions fan, and it just kind of rubbed off on me, so I got to go with the Lions for this one.
No, Gavin's not actually dead. Hopefully he's doing well, and hopefully he's cheering big time for the Lions. I would love to pick the Cardinals here because of what I saw last week, and I think this is going to be a shootout. I really do, but there's just no way the Lions start 1-2. I talked about it last week, how it just feels like they're a team of destiny this year. And last week definitely threw a little bit of a loophole in that because how are you going to lose to Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers and your home stadium? Once again, they might be a pretty good team. I think they are a really good team. But still, I think the Lions, just their offense is just as good as the Cardinals is. And I think last week might have just been a little slip up. Yeah, give me the Lions in this one. All right, moving forward. Big game this week as well. Ravens and Cowboys. The Ravens looking to not start 0-3 and the Cowboys 1-2. Either way, whatever happens to either of these teams in this game, whether it's a loss for both ways, it's going to be tough for these fan bases to be able to swallow that. So this is a huge game and the stakes are high and it's only week three.
Yeah, isn't that crazy to say for both of these teams? But I'm going to be riding with the Ravens. I think the Cowboys, they want to make some revenge, especially being at home. But that Ravens pass rush is so awesome. And Lamar is just an MVP candidate. He just cannot start off 0-3. So I'm going to be riding with Baltimore this week.
Yeah, I say Baltimore too because I just don't see this team beginning 0-3. They're too good. They're too talented too. And their coaching is way too good to not. So I don't think the Cowboys are a bad team at all. I think it's going to be a good game. But I think the Ravens are going to come out on top.
I don't know anything about either of these teams. Mm-hmm. I think Ravens are a cool bird.
They are.
And that's
they are.
Where I'm putting my faith.
I like that.
Oh, man. Do we sweep with the Ravens? Yeah, we're going to do it. There's no way that John Harbaugh's Ravens start 0-3. It's just simply impossible. And either way, the Ravens have been in both their games, like, pretty fit. Like, you know, they lost by a toe week one, and then somehow Gardner Minshew and the Raiders were able to just pull off an immaculate drive to beat them last week. I think the biggest thing of it all is I haven't liked what I've seen out of the Cowboys, especially on offense. Like, week one, it was really, like, their defense that just kind of stepped up. Obviously, Dak made plays when he needed to, but in general, I just haven't liked what I've seen. Last week, the offense looked horrible, and they got ran over by a team that I don't think is that good, even though they've put up a lot of points. Yeah, I'll take the Ravens in this one, and we'll go full pick five against for the Ravens, should I say. All right, Chiefs and Falcons. The Chiefs starting off 2-0 on their way to potentially going back-to-back-to-back. Meanwhile, the Falcons getting a huge win on Monday night last week and really silencing the haters against that team. So I think this is a big one. This is Sunday Night Football, and I'm super excited for this game.
Yeah, Falcons hosting the Chiefs, fresh off a win against the 49ers. And could you imagine if this Falcons team in the first 3 weeks was able to beat the Chiefs and the 49ers? Well, it's not going to happen.
Eagles.
Yeah, give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, give me the Chiefs easily. I took them. I bet against them last week. I mean, 2 weeks ago when they were in the last primetime game. I can't do it again. I just can't.
One thing about me is that I love Taylor Swift. Okay.
You're lying.
I'm a massive fan. Uh-huh. Everyone in the studio knows it. So I got to root for Mrs. Taylor Swift's boyfriend, Mr. Travis Kelce.
Will she be there this week?
I don't know. I hope so. I like it when she shows up. It's very supportive.
Yeah. And she's always got like cool outfits on too.
That's true. She's always looking the best.
Yeah, of course. For me personally, I'm doing it again. I'm riding with the Falcons.
I love it. I love it. I respect it.
Look. The Chiefs are the best team in football. There's no doubt. But what I saw from the Falcons last week, I'm not letting us all pick the same games. I was feeling the Falcons anyways. I don't know what the game lines are or whatever, but either way, I think I'm betting the Falcons. I think I'm going to bet them in this game. I'm taking them to win. Yeah, the Chiefs can start 3-0, but that's not fun.
It's
give
not
me the Falcons. No, it's not. I promise it's not.
If the Falcons win this, you have to get a Kirk Cousins jersey,
I think I'd get a Bijan Robinson jersey.
Okay, okay.
Because we were talking about it. First week of Red Zone, we talked about Bijan Robinson. Mm-hmm. This might be just, we love the birds on this podcast.
We love the birds.
The Falcons. Mm-hmm. Who else are we talking about? The Cardinals.
Illinois State.
We don't really love the Ravens that much. We do love Illinois State, though. And we also, me and you, picked the Eagles to be the championship.
Yes, yeah.
So we love birds here. I'm taking the Falcons over the Chiefs.
I don't know how I feel about that take anymore. Honestly.
Yeah, they're looking rough right now. It does not look good in Birdland in Philadelphia, should I say. All right, Monday Night Football. There's actually two games. Joey picked the better of the two because the other one feels like it should be chalk.
Yeah.
It would be the Bengals and Commanders.
I mean, I feel like this one might also be chalk.
Monday night?
There's two Monday night
games. A double header on Monday night.
This has happened in the past.
It has, yeah.
Yeah.
That's just
I feel like it happens
game,
like week one, though, usually. I don't know. Well, hey, 2 LSU Heisman quarterbacks going against each other on Monday night for Bengals Commanders. But that's not the game we're picking right now. We're picking the Jaguars and the Bills. And the Jaguars off to an 0-2 start really, really need this one. Meanwhile, the Bills, even though everyone was chirping them this offseason about, you know, they don't have wide receivers, they lost a bunch of key pieces on defense, Josh Allen looks like the MVP, and they're trying to get off to a 3-0 start. Who are we going with this week?
Yeah, I'm going to make the same exact mistake I did last week, where it's just, I was so confident in this game, but I'm going to switch it last second. The Jaguars just have no right to win this game, and that's why they're going to win. Give me the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I mean, I bet against Josh Allen the last 2 weeks. I can't again. I'm just going to take the Bills. They look so good right now, and this Jags team, I just don't think is that good. So, let me see them.
I think I'm also going to go with the Jaguars, which it's wild that I consistently have been agreeing with Joey. but I just think you can't lose 4 games in a row.
You can't.
You just can't do it. That's embarrassing.
Mm. Especially for a team that should be as good as the Jaguars. I'm going to agree with you guys all, too. I'm going with Jacksonville this
week.
You
guys suck, bro. This is free points for Steve now.
No, that's my own. He took the Bills,
okay,
too.
Thank you, Joey.
I'm taking the Jags because it's for my brother's sanity. Uh-huh. My brother, little do you guys know, and to all of our listeners out there, my brother is a huge Jacksonville Jaguars fan.
Oh, that's nice.
How? I don't know, but he is. So I'm going to take the Jags. I think they need to bounce back in a big way. They've kind of lost both weeks in just really upsetting fashion. And for his sake, I just hope that he makes it out alive. Because if they go 0-3, I'm going to have to check in on him.
Yeah.
But I think we'll be fine potentially even though I've been hyping up Josh Allen, I'm just taking the Jags for my brother because I like all my other picks.
Yeah, I like that a lot, but it's just football's such a wild sport. So many games just seem so predictable, and then just the opposite just ends up happening. And I don't know why. I'm just getting that mojo. I'm getting that vibe right now. It's just the Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence, I think he's a good quarterback. I don't think he's great. They got weapons on that offense. It's a solid defense. I would not be surprised if the Bills have a slip up and lose to the Jags.
Well, after last week, who really knows? Any of these picks can come true. Mm-hmm. Like, there were, what, 8 total upsets mm-hmm. last week? And that is just unheard of in the NFL that, for the most part, it just feels like chalk. So, I don't know. Colleen, you got anything else to say before we wrap it up?
I think that for someone who doesn't know a lot about football, I know that the Bears are going to lose.
Okay.
And that I love the Lions and Taylor Swift, and that's where I'll leave it.
That's football right there.
That's football.
That's why we love this sport.
2024 football.
Let's go. All right, once again, thank you all for joining us on yet another edition of The Red Zone. We are back here every Thursday night where we can bake Joey for all of his picks that he made that ended up becoming wrong. Once again, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of The Red Zone.